The holidays are over, but we're still feeling bright on the Cord Cutter Podcast.
Ah, see what you did there. Ah.
Good stuff. I've been saving that all throughout. Basically, when I first popped it in on Netflix, I was like, that's what I'm going to say. And it's going to be terrible, but I'm going to go with it anyway.
Yeah, because that's what you do.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for that vote of confidence. Yep, on today's Cord Cutter Podcast, we are discussing the movie Bright. Mm-hmm. Will Smith. Joel Edgerton, I believe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
First try.
And yeah, I'm so glad I got it right because it's all over the place on how to pronounce it online. I'm so excited to be talking about this film today. We got Eric Eisenberg in the house. Eric, you haven't been with us for a while.
It has been a minute, yeah.
What was it? You were last here with Iron Fist?
Yeah. No, it was Defenders.
Yeah, Defenders. That was the last one. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I always remember the Iron Fist one. That's like the dark mark in the Cord Cutter Podcast. I had my faith broken that day. Yeah. So forgive
There's
me for
that. There's a lot
of
vitriol there. Apologies in retrospect. Well, I still hate it, but, you know, I feel bad about making you feel bad.
We're going to find out how everybody feels about Bright here shortly. But first, Adrian has some news.
Yeah, it's been revealed that Steven DeKnight, who was the showrunner on season one of Daredevil, which is the series that set off Marvel's Netflix shows very successfully, he said that he's willing to return to the Marvel Netflix world. And Eric, I feel like you said before that you think that first season of Daredevil is like the best of all the seasons of the Marvel Netflix stuff. Is there something that you'd really like to see him do next in the Marvel Netflix world? Is there something in particular that you think he adds to it? What do you want to see him do?
I absolutely do want to see him come back. I don't think there's... And like you said, to me, Daredevil Season 1 is the pinnacle of all the Marvel Netflix shows so far.
Yeah.
Which is not to say anything against Jessica Jones or Luke Cage, which I think are amazing. However, I think that Daredevil Season 1 is really just the best thing that they've done. A huge part of that is, of course, the role played by Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin, which was just breakthrough stuff. It was absolutely astonishing. I would absolutely love Steven DeKnight to come back. Obviously, he's been a bit distracted working on Pacific Rim Uprising. That's what he's.
Yeah.
That's been basically the reason why he wasn't able to do Daredevil Season 2, why, and presumably why he couldn't have done Defenders. However, if I have to pick anything, I'll beg for the thing that every single Daredevil fan has been begging for since the start of the series, which is the arrival of Bullseye. This is a character who is Daredevil's ultimate villain and has long been for a while. I mean, I'd say like Kingpin is obviously a big mastermind, but on a physical level, Bullseye has always been the number one threat. And admittedly, season two of Daredevil kind of took a little bit out of steam away from things simply because in the comics, there's a huge, big dramatic thing where Bullseye kills Elektra. Now that Elektra's been dead and already been resurrected, you can only do that so many times. But I'm sure there are many, many avenues that you could go down, and I trust Steven DeKnight with anything. I think the guy's an incredible talent, have since his days working on Buffy and working in the Whedonverse. So yes, I'm totally on board with a potential Steven DeKnight return.
Now, if he comes back but doesn't work on Daredevil, do you think, for instance, that he could help out Iron Fist, or do you think it's too far gone?
Well, I think that it all kind of depends on what the future is holding for the future of these Marvel Netflix shows. Mm-hmm. To this point, they've established that like they were building towards the Defenders. Now, Defenders has happened. What's next? So, obviously, you have stuff like Punisher that is coming out and now is going to getting a second season, which was, it's really Defenders adjacent. It's not so much involved there, well, obviously stemming from there. So it all kind of depends on what the ultimate goal is. Personally, although it kind of sounds like they're melding some things when it comes to Luke Cage and Iron Fist, I just want to see a Heroes for Hire series. That's something that I would love to see together. And, you know, if Steven DeKnight is a talented dude, and if you're going to put it in anyone's hands, put it in his hands. Chiyo Hodari-Coker could potentially, they could work side by side in the same way that like Luke Cage and Iron Fist work side by side. That's just throwing that out there. But, you know, I think that'd be a nice ideal.
Yeah, and for something else they could do, if he comes back in time for, say, season 4 of Daredevil, they could still bring in Bullseye, because I'm pretty sure, doesn't he kill Karen Page also in the comics? So, you know, she could be, you know, his target, basically, for a fourth season of Daredevil. So
absolutely.
That's if he has time possible. To come back for season 4. When is season 4 of Daredevil, like, estimated? 2022? Like, it's a ways
that's
away.
That's what I'm saying. There'd be some time.
Right.
You know? And also, in another Netflix series news, apparently Fuller House season 3
because
decided... Yeah, decided to... drop the Steve Urkel bomb, which means that now we might have, at some point in the future, a Steve Urkel cameo. Mick, you watch that show, even though you hate it. Is that something you want to see? Are you looking forward
point,
to that?
Why not? Well, I recently, you know, we talked about it recently. I got into Family Matters, mm-hmm. although now I'm like way more concerned for the future of the series now that I know that it shifts from being a family show to basically just Steve Urkel doing whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do, you know, like, this show is just such a weird fever dream 90% of the time. The second half of season 3 introduced, like, a very high-profile J-pop star. And they, like, just...
Wait, like a real person? Or they
yeah,
made
this is
somebody
an actual,
up?
He's an actual celebrity. I forget which band he's in. But he's been described as kind of like the Justin Timberlake of, like, Japanese pop stars. So okay. This guy's in the show now. There's, like, literally, they just kind of jumped the ship, but they've decided that, like, jumping the shark is what this show does now, where it's just literally the most insane and crazy weird stuff. This is what the family's going to do from here on out. So why not bring back Steve Urkel?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Sounds good to me.
I want to see what a grown Steve Urkel would be like. Would he eventually transform into someone cool? Or are they going to, like, introduce, like, an Elon Musk Steve Urkel?
Well, Steve Urkel is a thing. We can't
just... Yeah, I was going to say, he's got a, you know, sort of sophisticated doppelganger anyway, called Stefan Urkel or something like that, which I guess you haven't gotten to yet on Family Matters.
That's later seasons, yeah.
So they could, you know, if... Jaleel White is not into doing Steve Urkel again, which I completely understand because he's got to be like 38 or something like that at this point. They
a check's
could
a check.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know?
But they could have him do his more sophisticated doppelganger, I guess, if they wanted to bring
sophisticated
him back.
Sophisticated and Fuller House are not two things that go hand in
yeah.
hand.
Yeah.
I'll
you're
just
probably
tell
right.
you that for anyone who hasn't watched. That's just how it is.
You know, I will toss it out there. Like, I have not been watching Fuller House. I watched Fuller House as a kid. I grew up. I don't care about Fuller House. That's
yeah.
the pattern that I've been experiencing. However, like, the idea of them bringing in Steven Urkel, like, that actually is appealing to me in a weird way. Just because, like, when I was a kid, I'd love, like, for example, like, the TGIF crossover nights. Like, those were great.
Yeah.
And I remember just, like, I mean, just completely just... based on that. Just remember, like, there was an entire, like, night where all the shows, like, had, like, a blackout. So they all had, like, plots centered around on what happens during a blackout. And, like, that kind of stuff is, I find that fun to me. And, like, obviously our culture has grown to love these kind of larger cinematic universes. And I think that is just simply a part of that. I mean, I probably will not become a Fuller House watcher because Steven Urkel like might be on there. However, I will check out that episode. Throwing that out there.
There you go, Netflix. If you want to get Eric Eisenberg to watch your show, you better bring back Steve Urkel.
Gosh. What is that show coming to? Okay, so... we're done with news. We're moving on to the weekly Q, or the more interesting title, What You Watching?
You're not going to let that go, are you?
No, I won't until people accept that that is what it is going to be called. So many people love it. And I just... so what have you guys been watching over Christmas beyond Bright? Have you guys been into anything else?
Eric, you haven't watched anything else?
Well, I'll go first. I will admit that most of my last couple of weeks have been spent like catching up with movies. Obviously, that's kind of a big consideration of my job. But one thing that I have recently dipped a toe into that I have been like that has immediately sucked me in and immediately wants me like has me wanting to watch more is the new Errol Morris series Wormwood on Netflix, which just launched, I think. Last week or the week before that. But what it's about is a 1950s experiment that involved dosing scientists with LSD, leading to one of them to jump out of a window committing suicide. And like decades later, the revelation of the actual reality of what happened, despite the like to this family who had been lied to by the government for years and years. And it is a real trip, as you would expect from the subject matter.
Yeah.
And it has a fascinating way of kind of blending reality with fiction in the way that it has actual interviews with the different family members, but also it stars people like Peter Sarsgaard and Tim Blake Nelson and actors who are kind of recreating the like events that the entire kind of series revolves around. And yeah, it immediately has my attention. I think Errol Morris is an incredibly talented dude. Oscar-winning documentarian known for Fog of War, Gates of Heaven. I'm going to be watching more. I've only watched one episode so far. I think there are six total. But yeah, it definitely has my attention.
Okay, cool. I watched on Netflix Pottersville, which is a movie I kept forgetting was going to be a thing. And then it popped up at the top of my Netflix queue or whatever. This is a movie starring Michael Shannon as a small town business owner who gets mistaken for Bigfoot while he's roaming around town one night. And that leads to kind of a booming industry in his small town. That's like the mill has recently closed. So a lot of businesses are closing and stuff. And now because, you know, people think they saw Bigfoot in the town, there's all this tourism and stuff. And it's wacky, but I think it's crazy basically in the right ways. There are some moments that lag a little bit, but I think this is a movie like you kind of have to see it to believe it. There's an unbelievable number of recognizable people in it. Besides Michael Shannon, there's Judy Greer, Ron Perlman, Christina Hendricks, Ian McShane, and Thomas Lennon are all in it. I think you have to see this movie, love it or hate it. I think it's worth watching just to kind of see Michael Shannon be a nice, normal person who just kind of just gets into a ridiculous situation. He's not tormented or tortured or, you know, there's no like really deep angst or anything. He's just a good, decent person who gets drunk one night, dresses up in a weird costume and gets mistaken for Bigfoot, you know, like so many of us do.
It's kind of a weird role for Michael Shannon. It sounds kind of like a goofier premise, and I don't equate Michael Shannon with goofy roles.
Exactly. Yeah.
And especially because, I mean, I most recently saw him in The Shape of Water, where he is playing the kind of like known Michael Shannon role where he's just an evil motherfucker and just ready to kick some ass. And like, yeah, to hear about him just like roaming around town. I heard about that movie. It sounds hilarious. I need to watch it. Like, it definitely has, again, my attention.
Yeah, especially when you combine the plot with the number of recognizable people who are in it, it sounds like it's not a real movie. It sounds like a joke. It sounds like some like one-off trailer that was done for Funny or Die or something. But it's a real full movie. And yeah, I think people need to watch it.
Awesome. I've been watching The Toys That Made Us. Well, I say I've been watching. I watched like the first two-thirds of the first episode, and then I was like, I need to leave for Christmas stuff. And then just went about the rest of my business. But from what I've watched so far, I am hooked on the series. I've been waiting for a free moment to binge the rest of them. Mm-hmm. It is all about the iconic toy era of the 80s. First episode is all Star Wars toys. Second episode's Barbie. Third episode's He-Man. Fourth episode's
He-Man. Yeah.
Yeah. It hits all the big stuff. If you were a kid in the 80s, it breaks down to what was going on around the time these toys were made. Tells you a lot of behind the scenes stories you may not have known. It's really interesting just the whole way through. I've been like, I love the Star Wars episode because like, it just, especially in the Last Jedi era where, like, people are rushing out and buying plushy porgs to give their children. Like, it couldn't have been a better time for it to pop out and people watch that episode to, like, witness the Star Wars phenomena.
Yeah. Cool.
So, that's on Netflix, 4 episodes. It's only about, like, 4 hours total to get through. So, like, each episode's, like, 45 to 50 minutes. Pretty easy watch.
Who made it?
I believe they're kind of, like, newcomers. They're not necessarily anyone who's, like, known. They kickstarted the project a while ago, and people liked the concept so much that Netflix was like, let's write you a check and keep that for ourselves. I guess is how it goes in the industry.
There you go.
And now we talk about Bright.
That was very dramatic.
It has to be dramatic because Bright has been a film since its release. There's been a lot of eyes on it. And it is a film where people are saying it's okay. People say it's the best Netflix film to date. Other people are like, eh, it's kind of neither. Like, it's not the worst thing you're going to see in 2017, but it's certainly not the best.
Well, no, wait a minute. There are a lot of people saying it's the worst thing Netflix has ever done, which I think is extreme. But
much, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
There are people who hate it with a passion.
Well, yeah, I know that. I'm aware of that. But there's other people that are a little more generous. I was trying to shed some light on those people.
Okay.
Okay. So here's another last name. David Ayer. Did I do that one right?
Yep.
Look at that. Yep. I looked them both up beforehand. I won't lie. this was a big... I don't know. Let's just first start things off with... You guys, I think we all talked about this kind of somewhat before. Neither of you were too high on this film.
Right. Let me just start off by telling people what it's about in case they don't know.
Yeah,
stars Will
that.
Smith and Joel Edgerton. It's the modern world, but there are fairy tale characters living... side by side, basically, with humans. It takes place in L.A. The story follows two cops while they try to keep a magic wand out of the hands of an elf who's trying to bring back a great evil that I like to call Sauron, but apparently they just call him the Dark Lord, but it's basically Sauron.
That's a pretty good synopsis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you laid it out. Neither of you were too high on this film. I'll say I thought it was average, but I think I would probably tip more towards the positive end of it.
Okay.
Just because I'm just probably more in general of a positive person. Just not to say you guys are negative. I'm not saying anything against you. I'm more of a positive leaning person in general. I'm more forgiving of films.
Hence Iron Fist.
Yeah, it's Iron Fist all over again. What was it about Bright that immediately when you saw this film, how far into it did you get before you were like, eh, I'm not really like digging this whole thing? Was there a point in the film, or was it from start to finish? Was it right at the end? Did it come in the middle, or like in the first 10 minutes when he's beating the shit out of a pixie?
Like, that didn't help. Nor did the like the much talked about line "fairy lives don't matter." Like just seems like such a mistake to open like within like 5 minutes of the opening of your movie. It's not great.
Yeah, and not just that, but Will Smith's character had just told his daughter that all the races were equal and deserved respect or something like that, and then he goes outside and kills the shit out of a fairy or whatever it is. It's like so how are fairies not okay? But everybody else is supposed to be... Okay, so everybody else is equal and good. Okay, I didn't get that.
Yeah. I think part of my issue with it as it developed was that it does have an interesting world. It's, it is a cool idea that, like, essentially events on the level of Lord of the Rings happened, like, 2,000 years ago or whatever, and, like, formed the modern world as we see it today. However, it does seem so all over the place is part of that, and it doesn't really seem to define how, like, people relate to each other. And a huge part of that, I feel, is just the kind of David Ayer of it all, which is to say his deep, deep obsession with the Los Angeles Police Department, which has been a ridiculously huge part of his career the entire time. And like, when you are creating a story based within this world, the world meaning the Los Angeles Police Department, you are kind of narrowing your scope as to what you can do and how the relationships between the characters work, and obviously given our modern world, it provides a certain context. However, just again, given the cool world that this entire place sets up, I don't feel like it actually expands on enough of it to give me a satisfying taste of it. In the first act, they drive through Elf City or whatever the hell it's called, and literally it's just a drive through, and that's pretty much all you see of it for the entire rest of the movie. There's a dragon flying in the air.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm like, where's my dragon? And it's just, it seems like, for as neat as a world as this created, the cop story that it kind of centers itself around isn't what I want from what this story presents.
Yeah, I feel like it wasn't big enough. Like, that focus on the two cops or whatever wasn't big enough for all this background world building that they had going on. Okay, so apparently, this is one of the reasons why I feel like this might have been better as a series as opposed to a movie. Okay. Because, okay, apparently, like 2,000 years ago, like Eric said, there was a big battle between the Dark Lord and like 9 different races of creatures got together to fight him, and the orcs were on the wrong side. And so
basically,
that's why
Lord of the Rings, as you said earlier.
They've kind of been ostracized, you know, since then and all that kind of stuff. But you don't get like all the stuff I feel like you need to really kind of understand what's happening. Like he said, all the elves apparently are really stylish and cool, and they have a lot of money and they're really smart. So I'm wondering at this point, why haven't they basically just taken over the world? Like he said, there's one scene where there's a dragon flying through the sky, and I'm like, what the fuck? There's dragons, and they're not just burning the shit out of everything all the time and terrorizing everybody? At what point did we have a truce with the dragons? Or does somebody, is somebody in charge of them? Is Danny out there in charge of the dragons, making sure, you know, that they don't just kill the shit out of everybody and destroy everything? Like he was saying, the fairies can be killed, no problem, nobody cares about them. Why is that okay? But everybody else is supposed to be equal. And they make a big deal about orcs, the Joel Edgerton's character being like the first orc cop. And that's a big deal. But centaur cops are okay. I saw a couple of those dudes running around. So apparently they do have some mythical creatures who are LA cops. So I don't understand some of this stuff. And I also feel like just in general, the characters could have been better. They were not able to really make me care about Will Smith's character or Joel Edgerton's character. I felt like one big sign for me that I don't really care about the people is that I can't remember what anybody's name is. And I had to look their names up for this. Apparently Will Smith is Daryl and Joel Edgerton is Nick. And I had like, those names did not register at all while I was watching the movie. Not that Will Smith always has to play a character with like a lot of charm or whatever, but I just didn't feel for him at all. I felt like his character was missing like some humanity or something.
I think part of it is that all the characters are kind of told like by other people what their kind of motivations are. Like there's a lot of exposition delivered through dialogue. And a big part of that again is the fact that like you are having this really small story set within this gigantic world and you need to explain those rules. However, there isn't really space within the story that you've established to get those rules across. So that resolves in a lot of like two people talking in a room, discussing like the larger issues within their society and their personal issues with each other out loud. And that doesn't really click. And I mean, it is inherently a bigger problem, and I didn't want to cut you off completely.
But
between having this very like narrow, like LA cop story, like very specifically LA cop story in this larger world that is entirely influenced by magic. Certainly you can't tell me that everything that what's going on with elves and orcs and humans in Los Angeles is exactly what's happening rest of the world.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about that. And this movie offers me nothing for it.
Yeah. And I hated Joel Edgerton's character. I just thought he was dumb and goofy and like a perfect example of why people tend to hate quote unquote diversity hires, because he didn't seem very good at his job. Like there's, okay, full spoiler alert. There's a part near the beginning where Will Smith has to kill like four police officers, and Joel Edgerton's character is standing right behind him and waits until the very end of that murder spree to pull his gun on Will Smith and say, okay, put your gun down. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You had like a full 2 minutes to try to stop him and you let him kill everybody.
It may have just been felt like 2 minutes because of the slow motion Bastille.
Well, possibly.
Whatever. But yeah, which I just felt was so out of place that I couldn't really wrap my brain around it. But that's a whole separate conversation.
Yeah.
I think you both touched on what the overlying problem of this film was, because I agree with you on that. This felt like a very interesting concept trapped within the confines of a story where you couldn't really explore some of the things you wanted to explore.
Yeah.
You can only tell, you know, police officers in general, if you live your life as a, I've had police officer friends tell me that you see the world differently through the eyes of a police officer. You're constantly exposed to certain things. So when we're in this movie, that's what I kept thinking of. We're only seeing like crimes go down. We're only seeing corruption. We're only seeing like generalities made about all these races. We're not seeing like what breaks the mold. We're not seeing what the fuck that dragon's gonna do later. It's just, and that was something
more of that,
that
dragon, man.
I think Max Landis, when he wrote this, he has an amazing idea. I think if Bright, this Bright film, was maybe like the third film in a series that told the story of medieval or fantasy world Los Angeles, it would be fine, because you would have established everything about what this world was about, what's going on in the future, and everything, and you could have lived with it. But yeah, it was just constantly frustrating how, as you said earlier, Adrian, we established that all races are equal and protected, and then he just straight up murders a pixie in his front yard. And I'm like, well, like in my head, I'm immediately like, what are they, like second class citizens? What's going on here? Maybe I'll get an answer. No, that never answers.
Yeah,
except
no.
His friend got shit thrown in his eye at some point. Yeah, no, you guys are definitely hitting on some of the things that I found problematic. I do agree that I don't think Nick was the best cop, and he was kind of a nerd. Like he just wasn't all that cool. Even
no,
in his,
he's
like,
he's really empty vessel. Like his big standout is the standout element of his character is the fact that he's the first orc to join the police force, and like clearly he like betrayed his orc brethren. Like there's big societal effects of who he is, but as just an individual, he is really bland, and there's really just nothing to him.
Yeah,
you feel no impact of that other than like he doesn't feel accepted, and then he finally gets blooded. That's going to be a big moment. But really, it didn't equate to anything.
No.
Because you're so busy trying to wrap up the plot. You're like, oh, these dudes cutting their wrists. Is this going to split? Like, is the orc community going to find out about this? Where does that pop in?
And also, I'm confused about this blooded thing, okay? Because Nick goes on and on in one scene about how he's not blooded and his father's not blooded. And, you know, none of the men in his family have been blooded for several generations, apparently. And then at the end of the movie, he gets blooded and he's like so relieved and happy. And I'm like, what the fuck? I thought you were glad that none of you were blooded. And they made it sound like becoming blooded for an orc was going to entail some sort of morally suspect behavior that humans wouldn't agree with. But apparently you just have to be nice and heroic. And if that's all it is, why do you care so much about nobody being blooded? I don't get it.
Yeah, it was just, there was many confusing elements about it. There were things that I did like about this film, which I want to shift to that. Because
okay.
I felt like this film did have some strengths. For example, I love the action sequences. I felt like most of the action sequences were amazing, which not surprising considering Suicide Squad. That was probably one of my highlights of that. Other things that I liked, I mean, Will Smith. He does what Will Smith does in every like action film. He plays kind of generally the same type of guy. I'm still kind of confused how he recovered from a point-blank shotgun blast as fast as he did. Like, how does that whole thing work out?
Well, what? I don't think they did they tell us specifically how long it had been since he got shot?
No, I don't think
it
they
did.
It did
seem like it
know.
Was fairly recent. I mean, but I guess, and he was wearing a vest, but even still, like...
Yeah. The guy he released, it was close enough that the guy he released recognized him when they were in the gang later. Remember that whole part?
Yeah, yeah, I guess that's so.
Yeah. It just depends. But there was other things that I liked about this film. I liked the I loved the makeup. All the makeup on all the characters. I thought that was all cool. It was definitely hampered by the fact that there wasn't a lot of context, as you said. I wanted to see more of, like, the elf town. I didn't know if that was, like, the Beverly Hills of, like, L.A. now or something like that. I wanted to see a lot more of that. Did you guys have any strengths of the film? Was there parts where you're like, what kept you going through this film? From start, beyond the fact you had to be on this podcast.
Damn it, Mick, that's what I was gonna say.
Was there anything where you're like, all right, this isn't so bad, this is okay?
Again, I mean, again, I'll throw it a bone in the sense that, like, I mean, some of the world building does work. Like, again, I am interested in the larger world that it builds. And, like, I do, like it does have an interesting, like, approach to magic. I think, I don't know how deep into spoilers we were planning to get. I don't like where it ends up going just because it's so...
We'll go full spoilers. Hand-fisted.
Full spoilers? Okay. Well, I think it's incredibly stupid that Will Smith ends up being a bright...
You had to know that was going to happen, though. I knew going into it.
It's so obvious. Like, from the second you say, only elves are brights, and maybe some select humans are, but they, like, really keep that on hush. It's like, of course Will Smith is a bright. Don't sell me down this river expecting me not to figure that out. Which, so that whole thing is dumb. But, like, I appreciate the idea of, for example... what brights are, which is the idea that not everybody can control magic. If that were the case, the world would be radically different than everything it was, everything that it is, which allows for the kind of universe matching between our world and this fantasy world. So it does lay down some cool universe rules and ideas. However, just ultimately, I don't think it does enough with them is really the execution problem.
Yeah, I did really like about the whole, how they set up magic, that in this world, a magic wand actually has power. It's not just a stick that
it recharges, basically.
That kind of transmits the person's power.
The natural power, sure.
Yeah, I think they called it at some point, that they described the magic wands in this universe as a nuclear weapon that grants wishes. So I liked that the wand itself actually had power, and you just had to be the right kind of person to control that power. And if you weren't, you just blew the fuck up. I liked that.
Thumbs up.
I think visually the film was very interesting, although sometimes I think it added to the confusion. Like that scene where they first arrive on the call in the magic, I was like, all right, they obviously fried those people and they're burning. But when they had the woman who was kind of sitting, like, within the wall...
I was completely confused by that.
Yeah. I thought it was, like, a visual thing. I wasn't even aware that was an actual person until she started talking. And then later on, they kind of show what happened. Yeah. But I was like, that's something that kind of needed a little setup for me to, like, understand.
Yeah, I thought at first that she was some kind of vessel who had agreed... to be used in some way to bring back the Dark Lord, and that was some kind of ceremonial thing that they had done with her. But it turns out that's not it at all. She just got fucked up with the magic wand and, like, merged with the wall.
Yeah, I assumed there was something special about her just because
she looked
different than everybody else that they had passed, but no.
I'll also say this. I'll say as a plus, and David, it's kind of a backhanded compliment of sorts I'm about to say here, but David Ayer, of all the things that bugged me the most when he did Suicide Squad, it was that every 3 minutes of the film felt like I was entering a music video where the music was just coming nonstop. Like, damn, we're in another track already. I felt like Bright, he toned that down considerably where, because I was really afraid when Netflix started posting music videos for the songs for this film. Mm-hmm. I was like, damn it, here we go again. But no, I felt like this time he kind of reined it in a little bit. Yeah, there was the overtly long Bastille like shot scene, but I think he kind of reined it in and made it a little more appropriate this time around, at least for my taste, where I didn't feel like I was just watching a bunch of musical advertisements throughout the film.
Yeah.
Was there any other things that you felt I feel like, Eric, this is a good one to position to you. Adrian, of course, you as well can throw in. Is there anything David Ayer said he feels like he corrected a lot of his mistakes he made with Suicide Squad and Bright. Do you think that's something that's necessarily correct in what he did? Was there any problems you had with Suicide Squad that reappeared in Bright?
Well, you know, it is in a weird way an over-adjustment, and not just because in the way that the big problem with Suicide Squad is it's so front-loaded with the introduction of all these characters and who they are and delving into like these deep paths to the point where it eventually just kind of fails to develop an interesting story to actually use all of those characters. With this one, it seems like it has the plot, but then like it doesn't actually have the background or the build-up of the characters and like the establishment, which it kind of needs, if not just because the DC Extended Universe, for example, for Suicide Squad is a universe that we are familiar with. We do know how those rules work. We do know what exists within this world and what's capable. While in this one, we didn't. So he does seem, I would agree that like he has learned certain lessons from Suicide Squad, but I'm not necessarily sure that they've been appropriately applied. And yeah. I'm just going to even just throw this out there is that like, I actually do like David Ayer. I think, for example, I've just been thinking about my top 10 list recently, but End of Watch made my top 10 list, I think in 2014, the year it came out. I think it's a fantastic movie. He wrote the script for Training Day, which I think still stands up as a really, like, really cool movie, obviously anchored with Denzel Washington's awesome performance. But I do think David Ayer is a talented filmmaker. I just don't necessarily think that Bright, and especially Suicide Squad, is positively representative of what he can really do.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. God. Sounds good. It's been an interesting, Bright in general has been interesting for Netflix, being that it's a blockbuster film that they're trying to do in an area, you know, it's not something that's done, I guess is what I'm trying. Bright is basically like the test baby for streaming giants to spend a lot of money making a film, and then really they haven't done a lot to advertise it outside of their own platform. We haven't seen like huge. No. We've seen a couple. I think I've seen a couple NFL commercials for Bright, but beyond that, not nearly as much as you would see for the typical summer blockbuster. It's not summer, but in that context, do you think that Netflix has been effective in marketing Bright? Do you think they even really needed to market Bright besides saying, you know, hey, we spent a lot of money on this movie. It's on Netflix now.
Well, it is such a different model than we're used to with movie theaters, because movie theaters require you to get out of your house and go see a movie. Meanwhile, like if you have a Netflix subscription, if you log in, they can just throw a banner right up there saying, oh, by the way, Bright exists. So from a marketing perspective, it is just a different ballgame in a lot of ways, meaning that Netflix doesn't necessarily have to play the game in the same way just because, I mean, I assume you guys hosting a Cord Cutters podcast find yourself on Netflix quite often, and therefore, like, and guess what? That advertising is free. Like, every single time you access your, not only is it free, you're paying them to see their advertising for their upcoming programming. So it is something that they are going to have to adjust to, if not just because, especially as they develop more projects like Bright, which have much bigger budgets than what, like, especially the movies that they're used to making. That may require a bit of outside attention, if not just because there are going to be the people who aren't like us and don't access their Netflix account every single day and need to be reminded, oh, by the way, this is going to come out there, coming out in a couple of weeks, couple of days, whatever. But I do understand why we haven't had like the ubiquitous marketing that you'd see for a standard blockbuster.
Yeah. And also they send emails, you know, if you're not savvy enough to turn off all your email notifications from Netflix,
I'd say push notifications as well. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll just send you an email that says, hey, you watched A and B. We just debuted C. We think you're going to like it. And so, you know, even if you haven't actually been on Netflix in a week or two, you'll know if it's out there. So.
Certainly. So Adrian, you talked about this earlier, and part of me just thinking about how much was spent for Netflix on Bright, maybe you knock the casting down from Will Smith, you cut that check out, and you turn this thing into a series. Do you think you would have enjoyed Bright more if you had to sit through multiple hours of it to get an explanation behind the world building?
Well, as long as, like, if this cop story had been a part of a larger world where we were getting to see, you know, more of the elf who works with the Supernatural Bureau of Investigations or whatever it's called. And, you know, more in Elf Town and, you know, maybe more with the orcs or something. As long as it was well done, yeah, I would have sat through more of it, you know, to get more explanations for how this whole thing works together, which we just don't get in this movie.
Even if it's, say, the cop drama, if it would have just been cop drama all the way through, do you think they're maybe, like, introduced another element? Like, maybe it's Game of Thrones style, where you're following the cops, but you're also following maybe the leader of, maybe that dude who runs the gang, the orc gang, or something like that.
Yeah.
I'll throw an anthology series out there. You have this entire world full of various weird characters that you can potentially take advantage of. Have every single season be a different, like, perspective. Have the first, maybe, like, the first season be orchestrated by someone like David Ayer, who loves the LAPD, and have him orchestrate that story. But then have a completely different filmmaker who has a completely different idea for this universe to go and build. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that.
Who are the Centaur cops? Do they have their own union? I want to know stuff like that.
Centaur cops. It did get me thinking of the marketing and the argument that, you know, you just felt like the film wasn't enough to explain what was happening in this world. It made me almost question whether or not, and this kind of would be a somewhat unheard of thing, but what if they had done, like, maybe Bright Part 1, Bright Part 2, and yeah, it's not a traditional movie, but you have basically theater-length production, but then you have that freedom to break it up into two separate parts to kind of expand this world further. I don't know. I know we're getting Bright 2 regardless. I know there's going to be a sequel. But maybe just extending the film into two different parts would have broken it up just enough to give us a little more clarity on, like, why exactly it was so bad if the Dark Lord returns. You know, why are people still talking about this shit 2,000 years later? Like, it's just all the stuff I want. Like, if we had something happen 2,000 years ago, you're going to have skeptics about it happening. I wanted to explore, like, more of that world. And I felt like maybe a little more time would have had, like, I don't know, a little more to talk about with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Will Smith is coming back, apparently, for the sequel. And...
Well, yeah, he's a Bright.
I don't know. Well, he's the Bright
now.
Eric, just take it away.
Well, I was just gonna say, it's tough strategy to, like, especially when it comes to an original property, it's tough strategy to make a movie and then make a sequel expecting that everybody has seen the first movie so that
and
you
enjoyed
the
it
movie
enough to like, watch yeah
exactly and then like use it to retroactively fix the stuff that you did before. Like, that's just hard strategy. I will say Netflix, of all places, is, and I mean all streaming services really are in a unique position where they could potentially make that model work I'll go to a perfect example of, like, BoJack Horseman. When I first watched BoJack Horseman, I had to adjust to its world because it's weird and like you have to get used to its sense of humor and like its kind of vision of reality, but you have to also keep watching, and this is kind of the thing for most television series, but the reality is with Netflix especially, because it's just all there, you can dive into it at your own pace, you can see it and see how it unfolds, and now BoJack Horseman is it's arguably one of my favorite shows that are currently available, currently running. So, like, Netflix is in a position where they could make Bright 2, have people say, like, oh, wow, Bright 2 actually does really good things that improve on Bright 1, and have people kind of go back to Bright 1 and then watch through. And, like, that is a potential strategy for them. But, again, it's, like, terribly risky. And if Bright 2 doesn't work in the way that you want it to, a great way to shoot a lot of money down the toilet.
Yeah. And I was really hoping... Okay, I thought for sure that one of the main trio protagonists was going to die. And when that didn't happen, I was really kind of upset.
Honestly, like, I thought the resurrection of Joel Edgerton's character was just, like, that kind of moment where if you let that just happen, you add a certain heft to it. They're just like, oh, wow, they actually went there. But they don't, so, yeah.
That part kind of shocked me. I don't know why I didn't see it coming that he was going to get resurrected. But it's just like, as soon as he like dropped, I was like, oh, they killed him. And then I was like, I don't really care that much. And he came back, I was like, oh. It kind of made me a little more interested in his character. I'm not going to lie. So Bright 2 is a thing that's officially happening. And what I would like to believe is that this plot's going to thicken with the Dark Lord returning. However, I don't think you can do that. If they couldn't build a world effectively in an hour and a half, I find it very hard to believe that Bright 2 ends with the Dark Lord returning and then them being like, do we roll the dice and do Bright 3? Like, I don't, as lukewarm as the reception's been, I'm just kind of nervous about making the film go in that direction. So it makes me wonder, what would it take? What could Bright 2 do that could change your opinion of this franchise where you'd be like, all right, this was okay?
Time jump. I'm going to go with time jump. I'm going to say that the sequel is set in a world where the Dark Lord has returned. You have all this kind of mad, insane chaos already. By the way, I'm just completely speaking this off the cuff. But essentially, you just need something that completely disrupts the cop drama that you've narrowly focused yourself into. And if you have, like, you can still focus on Will Smith's character, but have, like, the world be a completely different place and have the entire thing uprooted by the return of the Dark Lord and have him, like, have a whole new context as he battles towards whatever new mission he could use.
Yeah, and also that would be an impetus for him to actually use his powers as a Bright, because he didn't seem that once he realized he was a Bright, he didn't seem that interested in, you know, controlling a magic wand or using magic or anything. So he would you'll need something for him to want or need to use that power. And that would do it.
You're right. A time jump would definitely... It would also skip all the wizardry school, go into Hogwarts. If you jump like 2 or 3 years into the future, he knows more. He knows spells already. He's undoubtedly using that power for the betterment of mankind. I'm not quite sure where Nick falls being a blooded orc in this future timeline. You know,
nowhere.
He's blooded, he has acceptance. It was just so problematic because I feel like I was waiting for some big emotional weight, some feeling for Nick. But yeah, at the end of the day, all I felt was this dude was just a nerd. He was just a nerd. And even in his, like, I still can't get over this. There's one other, the final moment when it's time for him to, like, he's getting strangled and stuff. He didn't even have, like, a cool line. He was like, I can't even remember what he said. It was that, it was just that boring. It wasn't even, like, a one-liner. He was like, let's get out of here. Like, it's just, like, something like that. It was so bad. I also have a problem with... Because we haven't touched on this yet.
Uh-huh.
What the hell was the deal with Tika? Because she seemed like someone who was, I don't know. I thought there was something off about her at first. And then all of a sudden she turns into a normal human being like near the tail end of the film. They throw that twist really quickly in there that it's her sister. It just felt very sloppy putting that character in like the film at all. It didn't do anything for me.
Well, the weird thing for me, I don't think they turned her into a normal human being. I think the weird thing for me is that she's speaking elfish or whatever through the whole movie, like she doesn't know English, and then suddenly she's speaking English like she's known it all her life. And I'm like, what the fuck, woman? You couldn't have just done that to make things a little bit easier?
Yeah, there's like that throwaway line about her trusting her, which makes her trusting them, which is like... Yeah,
like, if all the events that went down there, why would you be like, all right, now's the time to hitch my saddle to these guys?
It seems yeah, like when all they've the right done from the moment they met you was try to help you.
There was also those weird cartwheels she kept doing in the air that just were, like, Power Ranger-esque. I don't understand, like, it almost defied physics when she was, like, in the grocery store and she did, like, a full horizontal cartwheel and then just lands standing up. I was like, what? How does that even work?
Yeah, I think that was just supposed to be our sign that elves are more agile than humans are. You know, that they're more capable of doing that kind of stuff than we are.
This is all implied world building, though. That's what I felt a lot of Bright was
yeah.
You sitting in your head and trying to make sense of what you're seeing on screen. You're like, oh, elves must be able to do horizontal cartwheels.
And it's not, and it's not even a matter of, like, trusting the audience thing, because, like, I'm a smart audience member. I can pick up what you're throwing down most of the time, but you're not really giving me enough to, like, grasp onto or be interested in to, like, spend the effort to try and figure out what the hell's wrong with this character. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just the way it is.
They should have done something to establish the fact. I think you're right on track, Adrian, the fact that Max Landis went into this film writing it, saying this is Lord of the Rings in the modern day. And if they would have just acknowledged that, I think that would have made people... Well, but they introduced things that were outside of the Lord of the Rings universe. It was kind of like he took the stereotypical trope of, like, every mythical creature and just kind of threw it in there. And I think if he had just done like a little more to like guide the audience in that direction, I probably wouldn't have questioned as much as I did with this film as to like what orcs can and can't do. Mm-hmm. Apparently they make great NFL defensive linemen.
Yeah. And not
you got that much
that great at being cops.
All right. So Allie's wanting to know, we touched on a lot of negativity, by the way. Allie's standing in for Gabe this week, invisible listener who's listening, by the way. She wants to know if there was one really, if there was one good thing that stood above all good things in this film, above the sea of stuff. I'll give Adrian time to think about this because I know she's already in that negative headspace.
Why does she get time?
If there is one thing, I'll start. Okay. I will say if there was one thing about this film that I did enjoy above all others, I loved the fact that, like, just the aesthetic of it all. I loved, like, the graffiti, the little work they put into the side, you know, the Dark Lord graffiti. I loved the costumes. I loved the, like, orcs in their, like, gang outfits. I loved... Yeah, that's about it. But it's like, I'm not trying to be that way. I touched upon loving the action earlier. The car sequence in the grocery store, I thought was, like, amazing watching it go forward and backward. I kind of questioned how well a car would be able to navigate in a convenience store, but it didn't matter. It was fun to watch nonetheless for me. I enjoyed that whole scene. All right, I feel like I've stalled long enough for you guys. What do you got for me?
I'll say, as a fan of Joel Edgerton, that I appreciate that I can sincerely not recognize him at all within this movie, and
you
therefore
are right.
He's kind of shielded from any of its negativity. So...
Oh,
we
God.
Can all just pretend he's not actually in it.
Right, yeah, it's just they actually found a real orc and they cast it. It's like truly groundbreaking. And good for them.
I'm just going to go ahead and not tag anyone associated with this film on Twitter or the podcast. Adrian, what have you got?
The magic wand was the best part for me. Because like
that
I said,
yeah,
usually it's just a stick that doesn't do anything. And in this world, I really enjoy that magic wands have their own power that you have to be able to harness.
All right, fair enough. I think it's about high time we move on to the game titled How Bright Are You?
Mm.
You guys ready? Mm-mm. You up for the challenge? I think some of the things we've talked about have appeared, we've already talked about in the podcast, so these questions will be a little easier than other quizzes. Bright is the most expensive Netflix original film of all time, which puts its price tag at which dollar amount? Your choices are $75 million, $90 million, or $95
million. 90.
What did you say, Eric?
90?
You both are correct. It's $90 million. Mm-hmm. Was the budget. Question number two. The orcish love song is actually a real heavy metal song called Hammer Smashed Face, and it is sung by which metal band? Is it As I Lay Dying, Mastodon, or Cannibal Corpse?
Cannibal Corpse?
What do you got, Adrian?
I'll go with Mastodon.
It is Cannibal Corpse.
Hooray!
And I was... I remember that from my edgy high school days. I was like, is that Cannibal Corpse?
You had edgy high school days? I don't buy it.
I was a scene kid back in the day. Hardcore, heavy metal, loved it. All about it. Joel Edgerton has been in two cop movies prior to Bright. One featured Jai Courtney and the other, Johnny Depp. What are those movies? I'll let Eric, you answer the first movie, and if you get it wrong, I'll pass to Adrian.
Oh, crap. It's directed by, I think it's the Michael Mann one. Public Enemies?
Adrian,
no.
What do you got?
No idea.
Oh, man. You guys give up? You want to take another guess? I'll leave it open since you both seem kind of clueless to it.
Public Enemies does sound like... Does
that
sound
right.
Him
there,
with him
isn't the only Johnny Depp movie that involves police officers though. There's another one fairly recent.
The one in Boston. Shit, Black Mass.
Yes.
Yeah.
Black Mass was one
of
them.
Okay.
The other one
was
Felony.
I've never heard
of that.
It was one of the more obscure ones. Black Mass was one I was like, hey, they gotta know Black Mass though. Next question. When Max Landis wrote the script for David Ayer, he compared the film to another 2012 film Ayer directed that gained some acclaim. What was the name of that film?
End of watch.
End of watch.
Yep, it was end of watch. Moving on. I was like, as soon as you mentioned that earlier, I was like, there we go. He's going to know that one.
Yeah.
Max Landis was confident of Bright's success prior to its airing. He said it was, quote, going to be his Jurassic Park, Training Day, or Star Wars.
Good Lord.
So wait, are you asking us if that's true, or which movie he compared it to?
Which movie he compared Bright to. This was going to be his Jurassic Park, Training Day, or Star Wars.
I mean, I have to say Training Day just because of the David Ayer connection.
I was going to say Jurassic Park.
It was Star Wars.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's a real quote.
Crazy.
That's a real quote from him. So, I can't blame Max Landis. He's always a guy who shoots for the moon. That wouldn't be the first time I've heard him make an outrageous claim like that. And, sure. You know, more power to him for trying. So, yeah. That's what we got. It was Will Smith who compared the film. He said it was a mixture of, what did he say? Training Day meets... I think he said Training Day meets Star Wars. And people trashed him for that. They're like, what? No. you're setting this film... That was even before the film came out. People were like, you're really setting a high bar for this film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, geez. So, we've reached the end of the episode. It wasn't... I think we were more generous to Bright. I think we were about as generous as the general public.
No, and I'll even say, it's not like... I mean, there's some reviews out there which do, as you mentioned at the top of the show, paint it as the worst movie of the year. I don't think it's the worst movie of the year. I don't either. It's a good movie, but I don't think it's the worst movie of the year, and there are certainly many worse movies that came out in 2017. That's what I'll say.
High praise.
That's where I'll lay it.
As many problems, as many things as I thought were problematic with the film, I will probably watch Bright 2. I think that's where I'm at. Adrian is a little silent. I was waiting to see what you said.
Possibly. I'll have to see, like, what direction they're going in before Yeah.
That's fair. All right, Eric, where can people follow you on Twitter?
You can follow me on, very simply, E. Eisenberg. E-E-I-S-E-N-B-E-R-G.
You're kind of one of the more social media apt of our Cinema Blend crew. So do you got anywhere else that people can follow you?
You can follow me. I also have a specific Facebook page dedicated to my stuff on Cinema Blend, which is Eric Eisenberg Blend. Very easy to find.
Perfect. You can follow the Cord Cutter Podcast on Twitter at Cord Cutter Pod. Shout out to the two followers we gained this week. Really loving that. Drop us a review on iTunes. It means a lot to us and helps us grow the show. If you're somebody who listens, give us a review. Just do it. Next week, we're going to be talking about so many more great things that you're going to want to hear about. Until next time, TV is overrated. Keep on cord cutting.